has said he's not wearing the Arrow costume anymore. Arrow's finished with. But he turns up in Legends of Tomorrow in the Arrow costume.
Does he?
Yes.
I thought I only saw Flash.
And Barry is in... Yeah, well, Barry's in the episode as Flash.
Yeah.
Which suggests that Legends of Tomorrow starts before the finales of their respective seasons.
No, that's not possible.
Why not?
Because how does he do if he what he was going to promise? Remember how Oliver told Captain Jack to you've got to do what you promised with the Night Ninjas people.
Yeah, that could still happen.
You really have to pay attention to things.
That could still happen. It's but the interest, like, it's all these characters are presumed dead or missing.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
And Firestorm was only Victor Garber.
Oh, and the Professor other ones got Stein. Their life wiped, didn't they?
Like, yes.
Like, okay, cool.
And when you do see Firestorm in the trailer, he's wearing a hoodie. He's not Robbie Amell. He's someone else.
Okay.
So I think they've gone Jason Rush.
After we do this, let's trailer it out. Shall we dive in?
Oh, no. That's not a question I need answered.
The handle's imprinted. Whosoever is carrying Thor's fingerprints is, I think, the literal translation.
Yes, well, that's a very interesting theory. I have a simpler one. You're all not worthy.
Welcome to this Watcher Quickie. We couldn't fit it into our regular episode, so we thought, why not record something a little separate? And we are talking all things Age of Ultron. We've been waiting for this, haven't we?
Rage of Voltron! I've been waiting all week for that.
Well done.
Okay,
Thank you.
I know that the movie came out a couple of weeks ago. Anyone else think it was freaking awesome?
I loved it.
I absolutely loved the crap out of this film.
Mm.
And Nick is silent, which is never a good
thing. I liked it a lot. I think it is not as rewatchable as the first one.
Watched it three times.
Well,
so wow. Let's talk.
Well done.
I felt the same as you. Like, I felt like it was a fun romp, but it wasn't
a
as
fun romp.
It wasn't as I agree. Not as rewatchable as the first one.
See, one of the things I really liked about the first one was that they'd established all these characters separately, and then they brought them together. And often, when you have that kind of a crossover or meeting. It's often kind of forced. It feels unnatural. This didn't feel unnatural. It actually it worked really well. And I think that was because you got things like Bruce Banner was playing Bruce Banner, not the Hulk for the most part. It was mostly an Iron Man film, really.
Set up. Everything had totally been set up.
And I think that was the problem, was that with Rage of Ultron, you didn't get that. I said Rage again.
You're going to keep doing it.
Because they were already there. It was like, and we're back again.
But this is the thing for us, let's be honest. This is not episode 2, this is episode 9.
Yes.
You know what I mean? We're watching film 9, and suddenly it's this whole, like, you know the story already. You don't need to be introduced to anything. And these guys are a team.
And that should have been the benefit.
The second day of their adventure. See, I think it was. I don't think it was a negative thing, and I think they did a really good way of structuring the history of Avengers by having the team change by the end, which I thought was really strong and bold. But I think that was very comfortably set up in the fact that they just dived in with the long shots and team shots and that whole cocktail party thing.
I guess one of the problems I had was that Avengers worked really well as a story. You did have dynamic problems along the way, and then you addressed it and the story finished. But it doesn't feel like the team learnt anything from that, because they're like Tony Stark... has got all these problems in Iron Man 3. He's a mess of a guy.
So what did they learn in the first film?
Well, you can't trust Tony to come up with solutions to things.
But that's, I mean, this is what I mean. Like,
you can't trust S.H.I.E.L.D. to tell you the truth. Like, that just kind of, they just ignored the whole S.H.I.E.L.D. drama of Winter Soldier. It was gone.
Well, not really.
Yeah, totally.
Because S.H.I.E.L.D. is gone.
Exactly, but why did S.H.I.E.L.D. go? Because of Hydra.
Yeah.
And they ignored all that. It was like, oh, we're going to get the staff. We got the staff. Is there any more Hydra?
But let's be clear, like... S.H.I.E.L.D.'s been gone for over a year.
Have they? Like, what is the scale of time in the film? We don't know this.
Because this is what I mean. The universe that's existing in Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. defines that. It's been over a year. And Marvel's Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. actually tied into, we know where this is. Oh, the scepter's there. Someone tell Maria Hill. Is what they actually... do you watch it?
The series?
Yeah.
I do, but it's kind of boring.
It's been amazing. Their season final was fucking brilliant. But anyway, we're not talking about that. We're talking about the film. And that's the thing. These other elements that they've created into the world are the ones that are those touchstones for the time. And this is the thing, which is a problem with the series, and which is why this is why it's a problem trying to have them fit and marry together. I was completely fine with it. I love the film. I love that it took the superhero storytelling elements in a different direction again. Yes, a lot of people have had a problem with the fact that there wasn't as much comedy and there was a lot more interaction and drama. Some people feel like there were too many characters.
I was just going to say on the comedy, I actually felt that in this one, the comedy felt a little bit more forced.
Yeah.
I felt that some of the one-liners were a bit... They felt a bit forced. Like, I felt like there was a bit of a... There was more of a nice rhythm or a flow to the dynamic between the characters in the original the first Avengers movie.
When they're all coming together.
Whereas in this one, it just... some of them felt a bit... Yeah, some of the one-liners felt a bit sort of contrived. Not to the extent that I'm like, that was crap. But you felt like
there was a falseness to it.
Yeah, a little bit.
How do you guys feel about the creation of the Maximoff twins in a bit of a different manner?
Didn't mind at all.
They're mutants in the comic, and we can't have mutants because Fox owns the rights to them, and not Marvel, and they can't be Magneto's children because he's a mutant and he exists in it.
I don't know what you're talking about.
then it doesn't matter.
Okay.
What did you think as a lay Avenger watcher or experiencer? What did you think about the Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver? The fast guy.
Thank you.
did they actually name them in the film? I don't think they did.
They were just the Maximoff twins. What did you think of those characters?
Generally? That's a good question. I'm glad that you said as a lay Avenger watcher, because I wanted to point out that I haven't read any of the comics, and I'm not as immensely invested as you guys are, and a lot of fans are. They're really like, crazy about the Avengers.
Crazy is the word. World.
I'm not. So for me, they are just fun superhero romps. I thought they were okay. They obviously didn't leave a strong enough impression on me either way, because I'm struggling for some reason, to come up with a really, poignant perspective. So obviously, I guess that in itself is probably not a great review, because I'm just like, yeah, they were.
Look, I thought personally it was really interesting. It's really interesting when you're looking at this kind of a superhero and team dynamic in a modern day visual, and within actual fights, and there's always a bus, isn't there? There's always a bus with people on them or something. It's just this, but for me, I thought the dynamics really fun and cute. It's really weird when you come from the history that I've kind of got, where I love the characters, I know so much about them, and seeing them introduced and told in this way is something that's a little bit disconcerting. So we need a spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert!
Even though you probably already know, the death of Quicksilver. Do we think intentional? Do we think because Fox owns the rights and is keeping him in the movies? Or do we think just good storytelling or Joss Whedon-ness?
I don't know.
What's this whole rights issue?
Fox have the rights to X-Men and the mutants.
Yeah.
Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch in the comics are mutants. Mm-hmm. Even though they've been Avengers, they were villains to the X-Men for a period of time. Mm-hmm. So they can exist, rights-wise, they can exist on both sides of that coin. Now, when it was announced that Quicksilver was going to be in the Avengers movie... suddenly Quicksilver was written into X-Men Days of Future Past by Fox and done really, really well in that. Mm. Nick looks like he's that screaming painting.
You've blown my mind. There really is a bus in every one of these films that I can think of.
Yeah.
And someone gets smashed into or through it
every time. Every time.
In that context, I'd say it's a bit of both. I'd say there's definitely a rights issue. But there's also just a bit of
I personally don't feel like we needed a speedster in this universe, so I was really happy with what that said and how that was created.
I kind of felt they wrote him out because X-Men had used him but not his sister.
I think that's very true. They've still got her within that universe. But yeah, I think that could be a very good point. I'm curious. One day we'll find out that answer, but I guess that one day won't be today. What was one of your favourite moments of the film?
For me, it was the Thor's hammer. Was actually probably one of the funnier parts for me.
I think that was one of the best acting that Hemsworth has ever done as the character of Thor. Obviously, I'm like, I enjoy the crap out of it and everything, but that, I was like, this is some of the best acting he's ever done in the role.
Mr. Hemsworth gets a hard time in those films because his character is, and it's one of my favourite topics, it's the Godish thing. It is two-dimensional. And unfortunately, every film has had him separated from the team for some reason or another. Mm. And in those scenes... he gets nothing to do.
Yeah.
So in the first one, it was when he fell out of the helicarrier and his hammer had fallen and he couldn't pick it up because, I don't know, his self-doubt or something like that. It didn't ever get explained. He just finally picked it up at one point and there's lightning. He's like, hey, I'm back. But in this one, it was like he went for the swim in the caves. Why?
You know what's harder as well is because they're using Asgard as the connective.
There were more scenes.
Well, they're using Asgard as the connective.
True.
Connective dot.
Oh, I know there was, but we didn't get this.
But do you know what I mean? Like, they're using Asgard as the connective thread just so much that he has to be that plot point. And it's really ironic because it is always detrimental to the character.
Yes. Yeah.
My favourite scene, I think you mean the hammer one when all the other Avengers are trying to pick it up.
They're all trying to pick it up and the payoff with Vision at the end when he just kind of goes...
Yes, I mean, that was my favourite scene. Wasn't that awesome? Just that one moment. That was genuinely very funny.
That was
very
great.
Very nice timing.
Yeah. I actually think the best bit of that, though, was right at the end when they're trying to figure out what to do with the Infinity Stone that's in Vision's head. Mm-hmm. And Thor's rationale was simply, he can pick up the hammer. He can keep it. And I thought, that's brilliant, because as far as he's concerned, he lives in a universe of absolutes like that. If this hammer can be lifted, that guy's a good guy. There's no two ways about it.
And I love that it's being put in that way. And what a brilliant creation of
it was such a great idea. Mm. It was very Frankenstein, but that worked really well.
What a brilliant way to create the character and introduce him into our universe. I'm a little freaked out about the fact that there's an infinity gem in his head, which means in the double movie, we may see Vision destroyed.
I was going to say, it raises questions as to his future, because he won't last.
You know, there's a million different things that can come into it. They're certainly creating this kind of a universe. How did you feel about Scarlet Witch's powers being so telekinesis-y?
I don't know. I didn't mind it. I like the idea that she
bad.
Could make them...
I mean, considering this is the Olsen sibling that no one's ever heard about, she's actually quite good. She's an Olsen.
Mary-Kate and Ashley's younger sister?
Older sister or younger?
I don't know.
One of the two. She's an Olsen.
Wow.
Oh, I didn't know that
she's
either.
She's not a twin.
Oh.
Okay.
Really,
she's the talented one.
She really is. She did a really good job. The special effects was fucking brilliant. Like, one of the reasons why I've had to go back three times is because there is stuff I miss in every single scene.
Mm.
And I love the shit out of it. The introduction of Hawkeye's family, I think, was really great.
That was really nicely done.
And what I think I personally really loved about it was the character moments. The character of Ultron, I thought, was absolutely brilliant. Yeah. He totally did a lot of squats at the gym because he had one big glute that we constantly kept seeing as time went by. But I love the character work within this film. Like, we've got this massive story about the end of the world, and what a creative way for the world to end, by the way. I thought that was really smart.
That was something I really liked, was that, like, the for a long time now, there's been discussion, or at least I've been involved in discussion, that the superhero genre is kind of like mythology for us today. It's our version of gods. And there's a book that's
DC have certainly taken that and ran with it, haven't they?
They have, because Grant Morrison went bananas with his Justice League run, where he actually set the Justice League on the moon, watching the Earth, kind of like they were on Mount Olympus looking down. And I really like that Stark Tower does the same thing.
Yeah,
you had all the Avengers meeting at Stark Tower and celebrating after their big battles, as if they were the Pantheon gathering and sort of, you know, doing their thing.
Mm.
And I thought that was great, because it really, when you had them go to Hawkeye's farm, it really brought them back down to Earth. Mm. They had to become normal people in that scene.
And I thought it was
great. It was so well played. I really enjoyed the hell out of that.
Well, the characterness, I mean, that's something that I get a lot out of in the individual films, and I'm really looking forward to Cap Civil War and seeing where that goes, and Black Panther and all of it. But the character stuff is something that I just really got a massive kick out of. Especially, okay, I love the relationship between Black Widow and the Hulk. I think it's a brilliant dynamic. I think it's nice to see it introduced. And for me, I just constantly feel like they're giving Scarlett Johansson these elements to this character that has existed in the comics and is canon, but well, not the relationship itself, but other parts that exist in the movie. They're really giving her meat, which they did not give her when they introduced her in Iron Man. Like, she really was just pretty and fighty, and that's one of the reasons why I had needed a bit more time to warm up to this character.
This is her fourth film, isn't it?
But she has had the most, she has had the most growth, and she has taken with it and really ran with it, and I've really enjoyed her portrayal of the character.
Yeah.
You don't like it?
I'm not sure. I was a bit iffy about her relationship with the Hulk, just because this whole idea that she has this, like, sings this kind of lullaby to calm him down, it felt like this sort of forced kind of maternal role that she plays with him. And this, again, this is someone who's not read any of the comics, doesn't have the background.
Well, this isn't in the comics.
Hmm. Yeah, so for me, I was like, really? I don't know. It was just a bit, and I didn't feel any chemistry between them. It just didn't gel for me. But one of the things that bothered me a little bit about her, she had a bit of a flashback, which was, you know, we got to learn a bit more about her background. What bothered me about that, and this kind of feeds into this, the internet went berserk over Black Widow and the portrayal of Black Widow. She talks about why she feels like she's a monster, just like the rest of them. She uses the phrase monster. She talks about, you know, I'm a monster as well. And she's talking about, you know,
Didn't she say, and I want to get this right, you're not the only monster on the team?
Something like that. Yeah. But her big reveal as to why she feels like she's a monster is that they sterilized her, basically. Like, she can no longer have kids. And there's sort of... There's a lot that's potentially problematic about that. This idea that women are kind of defined by their ability to have kids. Like, the implication that she feels like a monster just because she can't have kids is a bit... Whoa. It's a bit... It's a bit problematic, and I think that's... I certainly, you know, didn't lose my shit over it.
Some people did, though.
Well, see, the thing with people losing their shit, the thing that was wrong about that, it's not what they thought, because I actually, to an extent, agree, and I think, yeah, that's problematic. It's the fact that people actually got onto Twitter and were sending Joss Whedon messages saying, I'm going to fucking fight you, die, you asshole.
Yeah.
And it's... And, like, this is that ugly side of fandom that I don't like. People get so... obsessive about characters and about stories to the point that they think they have a sense of ownership over it, and they feel that entitles them to attack, abuse, threaten other people, which is... And that's what that... And it's kind of sad because that kind of obscured any actual interesting and intelligent conversation around her character portrayal.
Yeah, Dee might be able to help with this because... Yeah. I read all the stuff here. Afterwards, and I sort of had to trace back to figure out where it started. Mm. And I don't remember the scene exactly before that, but she was giving sort of a background as to her training and what they made her do as
and
well.
Now this
they,
is so disturbing.
And do you think that it was just a clumsily worded approach to say there's a lot of things?
If you watch it again, it definitely was her saying what made her a monster.
Right,
point at the
end. We got to get the words right. And this is why I think it's really important. She's not saying what makes me a monster is the fact that I am sterile.
That is what she's saying.
She's saying you're not the only monster on the team. And what's portrayed, because this is one of the things that I understand, I'm not saying this towards you, but I've read a couple of females who have taken really offence to it, because it's certainly... there was one which was written by a woman who's infertile, and I completely can see how she's taken that from that, and there's a very personal journey to it, and I completely understand that that's what she's felt with it, even though I completely disagree with where she's chosen to take the scene.
Okay.
Because we watch a scene in which, and this is something that I also want to stress, it's canon for the character, but also it's documented in the history that we have within the world. Children were taught to be spies and were sterilized in our actual history. And it's actually taking something that happened because that was just one thing that then they didn't have to deal with or worry about, and they could concentrate on killing people. That's something that actually...
really nasty.
It's terrible and awful. But we actually...
It's actually really interesting that I didn't know that. And I think that makes it even more interesting that they fed some real history into it. I think it's more just... the implication, this linking of women's worth to the idea of motherhood.
I didn't see, but I guess, and this is where we differ, I didn't see it as linking women's worth to motherhood. But in her past flashbacks, we see a child who is trained to become something and conditioned to become something, and then has this taken away from her as the only way she can step forward. And that bleeds into the depth of character, that this is also a character who has done hideous, terrible things that we don't even know anything about. And then, and has somehow turned that around, and we still don't know how that's happened either. And to me, I saw her, you're not the only monster of the team, is because he defines himself as a monster, not because he turns green. He defines himself as a monster because the Hulk hurts people. And we really start in this movie, saw an emotional thing for Banner, and even when it's like many people are in Valhalla, and just this is a toll that's taking on him personally, and she's dealt with that toll, and she's coming at it from a very different perspective. For me, it was very personal, and I understand different people who've experienced different things see it that way, but I also have kind of gotten a little bit annoyed, because I'm like, at no point have they said your self-worth is in the fact that you're a mother. She's actually saying it as a him in a way to go, dude, get over it. And then what it makes it such an interesting thing that then she turns around and goes, we have a chance to be happy, but I need the Hulk. And when she kicks him off that cliff, I actually screamed with joy in the film, because that's such... this character journey that we've seen for this character, and this is the character. I'm going to do whatever's going to do to make the mission become a success, even at my personal expense. And that's what she was saying, and that's what I saw her saying, and that's what I took from it. And it's real. And I sometimes feel like people I'm not saying people in relation to you have at all. I know I'm being careful for picking my words, because the stuff that I've read has been really personal from people that have taken, like, they've written blogs and stuff about their issues with this. It's been really personal, and the last thing I would want to do is even try to argue with those people, because there's a personal association that they've created to that, and that's their journey. But I don't feel like that was the story that's being portrayed on the screen.
Well, look, I'll say as well, because for me, when I heard about all this kind of uproar going on, I was kind of like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Because for me, that's how I took it as well. With the previous films and just my knowledge of the character, you just kind of go, when she said that, you're kind of like, yeah, she's a killer. You know, she's done all this stuff in her past, you know, that she isn't proud of. And what's happened was they got her to that point. They trained her. They did this to her. So it was like, you know what? You've got nothing else on your mind apart from killing and getting your job done.
Which is also,
which is why I didn't even think twice about it, and I didn't think of it ever kind of going into that direction, because I just kind of went, no, she's a killer, and that's what she's telling Bruce.
The first two times I saw it, I had no idea of that in mind. The first time I saw it was after Whedongate, I'm going to call it, kicked in. And after this actually, or Widowgate, I don't know. But after this actually occurred, and I actually watched it to go, have I missed something? And I'm okay with the fact that, no, I haven't, but someone's connected something very much more to a moment and a scene, and they really craft something great for the Black Widow, in the sense of, even with her being in the bar when they're shooting, going, don't turn green, like, it's that there is this connection for the two of them that he doesn't understand, and she gets so much more, which is what makes the choices that she makes in the film so much stronger for that character. And I guess I'm just a little disappointed that people haven't chosen to see that same experience.
I get what you're saying, but I think sort of being disappointed or angry is like, I feel like people are naturally going to have different opinions, and it's because people have different sort of perspectives. And I actually think these conversations, when they're had in a, you know, intelligent, respectful manner, are really good because they force all of us to think about things from a different perspective. I mean, naturally, so for me as a woman watching it, obviously my filter for the world and my perspective is totally different for you guys watching that scene. So, and I think the reality is there's actually no like one truth of what that scene was about and what it was. Everyone's going to read it differently.
It's just the way they react to it and what they do next.
Well, that's right, yeah. Mm, and I think it's actually also, just to shut down anyone that's thinking, going along the wrong path, I want to point out that Whedon was not scared off Twitter by the people that were... He actually made a point of coming out and saying, I did not leave Twitter because people were abusing me. I think he actually said something like, I've been dealing with people sending me abuse since I've been on Twitter. It's part of being a creator. Unfortunately, it shouldn't be. And he was like, I just left Twitter because I needed some creative space to do some new stuff.
Yeah.
Doesn't justify what people did.
Well, that's, I guess, I always have an issue when people just dive into this. You can have I take issue when people do it in general. You can totally have a rant about things and a rant about stuff, and you can rant your ass off. But when you tag the person in your rant, whether they're a celebrity or a creator or anything, it's like, I follow Dan Slott, and Dan Slott gets a lot of crap. Mm-hmm. He's the writer of Spider-Man stuff.
Yeah.
He gets a whole lot of crap. And what I hate is when people go, I just read the latest Amazing Spider-Man, and at Dan Slott, you have totally ruined the character for me. And it's like, you know what you've done here? You've made a classic mistake where you should not be writing directly your hatred to Dan Slott.
Yeah.
If you are, you should do that in a personal message.
But
not.
You know what?
But what you should be doing is, well, what you should be doing is going, I just read the latest hashtag Amazing Spider-Man, and what the hell, man? Like, I'm really annoyed. So that people can join who follow hashtag Amazing Spider-Man can join in the conversation.
Kind of agree, but kind of disagree, because I think whether you're going posting at the person or not, I think if you're saying something that is hateful, or you've taken the writing of a character as somehow like a personal violation of your, like, somehow you own the character, like, you've ruined this for me, or this person should fucking die, which is what people do.
Yeah.
I don't think people should post stuff like that publicly at all, whether they're saying it. I think that people need to chill the fuck out and realize that we're all adults. It's not okay to be hateful and abusive towards anyone about anything. These are stories, people.
And these are people telling you stories for your enjoyment. And if you don't enjoy it, okay. But that's it.
That's the amazing thing.
It's not your story. You don't own it.
I wouldn't go to the extent to say, hey, just don't read it or
give me four issues.
Don't talk about it. Like, I've done like ten years
it, but you've got
to
remember
studies at uni, so I'm very much the power of stories to inform culture and reflect culture. This, let's not, I'm not meaning to actually underplay the significance of stories in human culture, but like, we're adults. Talk about these issues in an open, respectful, and civil forum. Don't be
completely.
Like...
completely. And it's the ownership as well. These people don't own the character. It's not my Batman.
Die.
It should be. He's not my Batman. I've got to remember
that. I think it's more your Nightwing.
They act like they own characters. Like, I saw
Batman.
This really funny little webcomic recently, and it was like the top things you will never see on social media. And one of them was...
an apology?
One of them was, oh, you know what? I'm not sure about how this movie went. No. It was like... this character that I've really loved since my childhood has changed heaps in the latest iteration of the movie, and I'm okay with that. And I was like, yeah, you will never see that on social media, unfortunately, because people can't...
oh, wow.
People can't deal. The other one was, I have no strong opinions of cats.
You will never find that.
Yeah. Actually, I'm going to link that. We'll try and find it. We'll link it on Watch It, because it's really funny.
I love that idea.
Okay, so let's round out with getting back onto Avengers Age of Ultron.
Moral, like,
I know. Well, I think we had to.
I
think we had to, because that, certainly that whole Joss Whedon thing and the Black Widow thing as well. We had to dive into it somewhere.
All the fucking time on the internet.
I know.
In, not just in geek culture, it's everywhere, but it does happen in geek culture, and I just feel like no one's saying that we can't discuss things and have different opinions, different perspectives, but don't. Fucking just don't hate on people and abuse them.
Haters gonna hate. So, Avengers Age of Ultron. What do we think of the ending? Having the Vision destroy essentially his father, Ultron. Like, Ultron was a great villain. Do we all agree?
Oh, yeah. Spider was awesome. Yep.
That menacing voice.
He
even put his overbite into
robotic
Ultron.
Robert Downey Jr. ever. He was wonderful. I really liked
him. He did a great job.
I think they crafted it really brilliantly, and having Ultron. Having Vision destroy Ultron was so powerful.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's really nice.
And how cool is it when we actually see Vision for the first time? I forgot. The first time I watched it, I forgot that Vision was in the film. And then I'm like, holy shit, we get Vision.
I really like the way his look adjusted, evolved.
Totally. Yeah.
So he came out and he's sort of like an amorphous red-green mess. But then as he sort of interacted with them around him, and when he got the Thor, it's most obvious, and he sort of grew the cape. I just sort of went, oh, this is nice.
It's really smart.
It's him sort of trying to find his place in the world in a really obvious way, but in a way that makes sense to an evolving creature like him.
Yeah.
It was
I
great.
It. I thought it was awesome. No, it was great. Right, so how many shields do you give?
There's one more thing we have to address. Hawkeye.
Oh.
Because Hawkeye was the guy with the bow and arrow, which made no sense. In the first film, he was the goon for Loki, so
and
that
it
worked.
Made so much sense in this
and
film.
And he was wonderful.
It?
He's seen with Scarlet Witch where they're both hunkered down, there's explosions everywhere, and he's just saying, look, I'm a guy with a bow and arrow, there's gods out there,
that
how do you think
scene.
I feel?
Yeah,
it was brilliant.
That. I actually felt like he was, I felt like he was the hero of that story.
Yeah,
like, I felt
it was
like,
Hawkeye's story.
I felt like it was, I don't know if it was meant to be, but I felt like it was a Hawkeye story, and I enjoyed that, because he's the character out of all the Avengers that feels the most grounded, because he's just a guy with a bow and arrow, and it was kind of nice that it felt like, but it was in a subtle way. It wasn't in your face, but you got this sense at the end that kind of just slightly revolved around him.
And I did like that with him and Quicksilver having the constant one-upmanship, and then Quicksilver giving himself to save Hawkeye and the kid, and Hawkeye then took him away from the battlefield. It's kind of like,
beautiful.
In the end of it, they did respect each other, and there was, you know, sort of God and man.
Okay, got it.
But yeah, I thought he was great, and in my gods comparison, he would have been Odysseus. He was the normal man fighting gods and actually holding his own, and it was great. I liked him a lot.
And look at where it ended, like having a new incarnation of the Avengers.
Yeah.
And having him not say Avengers Assemble, like fucking cool.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that was cool.
But I've read a couple of people complaining about Scarlet Witch's look at the end, and I'm like, I've never really gotten, like, I apparently in that shot it was going to be Captain Marvel, and that was where we introduced
her. Did hear that, yeah.
But then they didn't get around to casting Captain Marvel, so
I wouldn't worry too much about her look, because if Marvel's shown us nothing else, every film the characters get new costumes before anything else.
Totally,
so
that's right. Yeah.
Totally.
War Machine's going to change.
And the new costumes were great, but having War Machine instead of Iron Man, having Falcon, it really sets an interesting stage, considering how many characters are going to be in Captain America Civil War. Mm. It really sets a really interesting stage for where they're going to take that, and I kind of can't wait.
Going to be good.
There was a lot of talk as well about how there was nothing at the end of the film. Now, there was like the
I took such... I mean, I knew, even though Joss said there isn't, I took such issue with it.
The Stinger was a bit of a fizzer, wasn't it?
But But the thing is, some guy was talking in a comment, oh, he's kind of got a point there, because all of the visions that they got from Scarlet Witch, they said that a lot of stuff's going to be playing out. That is your end of the film.
But it's always just kind been, of thing there. It's been a tag note to something in the future. They could have shown Wakanda. They could have, even though they already tied to that, they could have, like, let's face it, at the end of Guardians of the Galaxy, they promoed a comic that's come out that's kind of average. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, they could have done a million things, and it could have just been promoting Battle World. Do you know what I mean? In the comics, they could have.
Dude, they were just trying something different.
If you look
different.
At what they've done and how they've done it, like with each incarnation, they've actually stick to a certain formula and shifted it and changed it as they've gone along. And now this is the next incarnation of it, and we're just a little after such a good hype, we're just a little.
I can see where you come from, and it did do what the others did, and that was it progressed the story.
Totally.
Because Thanos is
the
big story.
But they progressed Thanos. Like, so many people... the problem with at the end of Avengers, and this is the one thing with the first Avengers and the others, more people were going, what the fuck is this, that don't follow the comics? And that's something that's happened there again. Especially when that's a glove that exists in Odin, in the movie universe, in Odin's trophy room.
Well, we've already seen it,
Yeah, and this is where I just go, okay, cool. That's an interesting choice, but... You're not answering those questions, so that can either work really well or really bad.
I guess I was expecting something that tied into Civil War or Doctor Strange or something.
Having a Kree land on Earth would have been enough.
Having Spider-Man arrive at the tower and finding it empty.
No, but then that would have been their whole...
I know, that would have been a waste
of this thing. Everyone kept wanting Spider-Man. It's like, dude, they haven't even cast it.
Yeah.
Anyway, is that all? Anyone got anything more to say about Avengers Age of Ultron?
No, that's it. It was just, I enjoyed it, and I look forward to the next installment of the Marvel Universe.
Bring it on. All right, watchers, assemble. Let's get out of here.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.